Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, you want to push the button? You do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players. Two sides. One is light. One is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're gonna need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for season 2, episode 21, question mark. And this week's question for your host is, have you ever fallen in a mountain river? My name's Dave Gonzalez, and yes, because spring rain mountains are pretty, but slippery.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and though I don't believe I've ever fallen in a mountain river, I certainly have fallen in many a crick. So,
and I'm Neil Miller, and while I have never fallen into a mountain river, I believe that involves being on a mountain, which is something I don't normally do. I have fallen both into and in a lake. There's an important difference there, because one is you fall and then you're in the lake, and the other one is you're already in the lake and you still fall. I've done both.
Okay. When do you tell our lake stories? Dave, do you need to say something first?
Now is a good enough time for lake stories. You're listening to a Lost podcast. I'm going to explain it right after our lake stories. Joanna, go ahead.
Okay, I have a lake story, which is, I ever told you the story about the first and only ever time I've gone water skiing in a lake?
No.
Yeah, I was a kiddo and big into like water sports or whatever. And I come from very like water sports friendly family, and I was up in, I think it was Lake Pendere in Idaho, and they're like, we're gonna take you water skiing. And I was like, what a great idea, I love to see it, love this for me. And you know, sometimes you fall when you water ski and that's fine, except like what they're supposed to tell you about is that you need to like let go of the rope when you fall. But no one told me that. And because the reason why you do that, right, is because like if you held onto the rope and they stopped the boat, you could go into the motor. So you have to let go of the rope and then they sort of like loop back and come get you. But they forgot to tell me to do that. So I just like hung on to the rope and they dragged me around that lake for a while like the rest of my family was on the shore being like, look at Joanna being dragged around the lake by a rope. And then finally, my like little brain was like, you know what? I don't care what I'm supposed to do. I'm like, go on this goddamn rope because I have swallowed an entire lake at this point and I'm done. And I let go and they're like, yes, that was what you were supposed to do. Anyway, so that was the one and only time I ever went water skiing. Neil, what is your, so I fell. Is that into a lake? What is that?
Right. That's a falling into a lake. Okay. Like you were not in the lake and then all of a sudden you're in the lake.
I was on top of the lake and then I was like on the surface of the lake for a while and then I was in the lake.
Yeah.
Neil, what's your lake story?
Well, mine is that my family had like a fishing cabin. And when I say fishing cabin, I mean like small and shitty. So like, just for the visual there, it's not like a summer home on a lake in Canada, but we had a small fishing cabin on the lake in Canada, and we used to take like our 35 person family up there sleep in the 2-bedroom cabin. It was very cozy. So I have a lot of cousins. I have some that are near my age. We were at times very mean to each other. We had our own dock where we had the boats, you know? Oh. So I have had a cousin push me into the lake from the dock, and then I've also had, whilst playing in the lake, cousins who pushed me over into the water whilst in the lake. So there's a lot of cousin-on-cousin violence from my childhood.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like...
But, you know, you fall into water, so, like, it's fine. It was kind of dirty, though.
I think on that same lake trip, my sister pushed me into the lake with, like, all of my clothes on, and it made me really, really, really mad. And so then, like, I was so mad about it that later she, like, stood near the edge of the dock, like, in her swimsuit, like, sort of, like, to give me, her dumb, much younger sister, like, the opportunity to push her in, which I did. And she's like, whoa, you got me. And then I got even madder because I was like, no, you go. Condescended to me. Anyway.
Remember when you could push someone into a lake and it didn't immediately cost them several hundred dollars to replace their phone?
Yes.
Yeah. Back in the old days.
Back in the days when pushing somebody into a body of water was a perfectly acceptable prank. You're listening to Lost Rewatch Podcast. We're rewatching the ABC show Lost one episode a week. We made it up to season 2, episode 21, ? And we split this podcast into two separate parts because there are two different types of people watching Lost with us. There are people who are watching Lost for the first time. For them, welcome. And you could listen to the first half of this podcast. It's called The Calm. We will only talk about episodes we have previously rewatched on this podcast. And you could hear us talk about all those episodes earlier on the feed. There's a lot of content, like several solid days worth of content at this point. So welcome. Check out Lost. We talk about it a lot. For those of you that have already rewatched Lost, maybe it was while it was being broadcast, maybe in the decade in between those two things, decade plus in between those two things now. Let's say that you are here and rewatching it like us. For you, we have a second half of our podcast called The Storm, based on Storm of Spoilers, where we could talk about this episode in the context of all six seasons of Lost. And there is, you know, stuff in question mark that gets introduced that is relevant later. Or questions in question marks that are relevant later. Things like that. You know how it goes now. If you want to look down at your podcasting device, there are time codes that outline the Calm No Spoilers and Storm Spoilers sections, so you could jump to that. You all see the time code for our interview this week. We have David Sims, a returning guest, on. And if you want to support this podcast more than you already are by listening to us during these difficult pandemic times, you go to patreon.com/stormspoilers. And there you could subscribe to us for a fee on various levels. It's all explained there. Anyway, you get a whole bunch of bonus content. And even if you subscribe at the very lowest level, you will get a special type of bonus content that Joanna Robinson is doing with her friend Kristen Russo. It's called Feels Like the First Time. You've watched Indiana Jones. You've watched Lord of the Rings. Where are we up to on Feels Like the First Time for people who might want to subscribe?
We are currently watching Aliens, the Alien franchise.
The anthology.
Yeah. So we've been putting polls up on Twitter for people to vote into, like, which franchise they want us to tackle first. Lord of the Rings was the resounding early winner. Indiana Jones, also huge numbers. I thought Mad Max is going to take it, for our third project, but no, it was, believe it or not, Ripley. And the Alien films. So we've been watching Alien, Aliens, and we'll be watching Prometheus. And then we will be figuring out what we want to watch next. But Kristen's never seen it. We record one episode where she makes predictions, wild predictions. Sometimes she gets close and sometimes she gets very far off the mark. Then we watch the movies and Kristen does some like hilarious tweet alongs, on Twitter. And then, we talk about what she saw and what she thought. So it's been really fun. It's been fun for me to revisit, the movies. We've been getting some like really fun engagement from like not just our listeners, but you know, like random friends of the pod on Twitter. I like screenwriters keep getting like sucked into these live watches because they're so excited that we're doing them. So, you know, you're going to want to follow along to those tweets and all that. Anyway, so you can listen to those if you subscribe to our Patreon at any level. Dave, should I talk about some of the other things that our Patreon subscribers can enjoy?
Sure.
Well, great. You can be part of our Patreon-only Slack where we do, like, weekly discussions of the episodes. There's a bunch of other stuff going on there. Neil is doing this really cool, like, every day watching an episode of Breaking Bad with our listeners in there right now. It's, like, been a really cool...
Yeah, you know, we all have our masks on.
Your meth cooking masks?
Yeah.
Love to see it.
We're very, very prepared with PPE in the Breaking Bad hive.
So that is, if you go to Storm of Spoilers, patreon.com/Storm of Spoilers and join, you can get access to all that bonus content. We've got a great, we've got a great discussion with David Sims on this episode, but David Sims is, one of my favorite guests to talk about, like, long reaching spoilery stuff with. So we got a whole bonus episode this week with some extra Sims stuff for you. A simulation, if you will. So that's all stuff you can get if you subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/Storm of Spoilers. You can also, it's not the only way to get in contact with us though. You can also leave us a review, send us an email. Let me read an example of a review we got today, this week, from Nellie Smith from the UK. From the UK. All right. So 5 stars, a great podcast. I first started listening to this podcast when it was about Game of Thrones. When that finished, I wasn't sure about watching Lost. I didn't really know much about it. However, with lockdown happening, I decided now is a good time as ever giving it a go. And so glad I did. Love watching Lost and listening to the insightful and funny analysis later. Thank you for such a great podcast. So we got another one, folks.
Hey, you're right. It is a great time for a Lost rewatch.
And then you can also email us, host@stormpodcast.com. The email that we have this week is for our Storm section. It's a spoiler email, from Ryan, our listener Ryan. So we will read it over in the Storm section, but that is a great way to get in contact with us. For your questions, comments, concerns, disagreements, fun theories, peanut butter recipes, whatever the case may be. So, get
it. Hey, that's a Lost episode.
Hey. So that is all I have to say about that.
Excellent. That means it's time to dig into the question mark this week on the island. Neil, where are we at?
Well, Dave, this week, question mark. This episode was directed by Darren Serafian. I think that's how we say it. I don't know. This is a first for me. It was written by Damon Lindelof, Carlton Cuse. I know how to say those. Aired on May 10th, 2006. It takes place on days 64 and 65 on the island. In flashbacks, we learn about the circumstances that led to Mr. Echo being on flight 815. But first, a miracle investigation. Before he can leave Australia, he's tasked with investigating the case of a girl who drowned, then woke up during her own autopsy. And guess what? She's the daughter of Claire's psychic. And he admits to being a fraud. It's wild. On the island, we begin overnight on the beach where Mr. Echo has a dream, encouraging to help John figure out what's up with the question mark. Like a pair of hardy boys, they traipse off into the jungle to where Boone died, and whoa, there's another hatch under that plane. It's a monitoring station. And, of course, John has an existential crisis over it. In the hatch, Libby slowly, very slowly, succumbs to her gunshot wound. But not before a teary goodbye from Hurley and a poorly timed reminder from Jack that, yeah, Michael's doing just fine. It's all very, very sad. The episode ends with Michael glaring into space as he, as if he's not quite done causing chaos, while the mystery computer ominously blip, blip, blips. Fun fact for this episode, not related to Michael. Station 5, or the Pearl, is a monitoring station where the activities of participants in Dharma Initiative projects can be observed and recorded, not only for posterity, but for the ongoing refinement of the initiative as a whole. As Karen DeGroote herself has written, careful observation is the only key to true and complete awareness. This week's calm question, would you ever be willing to submit yourself willingly to a psychological experiment? I'm going to start and I'm going to say no.
No.
I just don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No, I'd do it.
You do? I mean, my guess would be that Dave would do it for sure.
I'd do it.
You'd do it too?
I was about to say, it depends how much you pay me, but now that I'm thinking, I'm like, no, I would just do it. But I want to know the results.
I would do it just to have something interesting to do.
Well, I'd want to know the results. That's the only thing that I would want.
Sure.
I would want to read the like study at the end or whatever.
But yeah, I mean, that's tough. I don't think you can do that.
Why not?
Wouldn't that taint the...
After.
If you knew what they were going for? Oh, after.
After.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I feel like I've watched too much Black Mirror to ever just be like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Whatever.
Nothing pharmacological.
The nice thing about being part willingly part of an experiment, like, let's say, is that it's not like a hatch situation where you're like, if I don't complete this experiment, like, people are going to die. Or, like, maybe it is, but you know, in the background, like, it could be like a psychological experiment. So the reason I would, like, totally do it is because they need my data. They need my crazy, like, question everything data. If I was on that island, I might not be always doing the correct thing, but I would always be doing something. Because at this point, my monkey elevator would be working.
They need the chaotic anomaly that is Dave.
Exactly. That should be part of the data set.
My monkey elevator would be working.
Well, I think that's ultimately where John Locke finds himself in this episode. His monkey elevator may have broken down, actually.
Yeah. No, he has to, you know, figure out, you know, his this very... The season that has a whole bunch of Christian tinges, it finally gets directly to the button is faith issue with Echo and John rather than just with John and Jack. And this time, John finds himself on the other side of the issue, and what he finds at the Pearl definitely does not persuade him into thinking more button pushing. Thinking that more button pushing is a good idea. Go ahead.
Can I ask you guys two follow-up questions?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, so I think the funnest fact of this episode, which David Sims and I talked about a bit, is the fact that originally they wanted Darren Aronofsky to direct this episode. In fact, he was supposed to, but that his wife at the time, Rachel Weisz, was pregnant, so he did not. But the episode's name, question mark, is an homage to the film Pi, etc., and it was supposed to be an Aronofsky episode. So my question to you guys is, which film director do you, like, film auteur, do you wish had gotten a chance to direct an episode of Lost?
That is a good question. A film auteur that would have fun with Lost, and since we're in the calm section, a very specific type of show that Lost is right now.
I have one, but it's for later seasons.
Okay, I'll ask you again in the storm, but I need your answer for the calm.
You need a calm answer as well.
I think right now we would need somebody that is really good at, like, a mood piece, and this is, like, the middle 2000s.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, a curveball pick. So what if you do, like, a Sofia Coppola Lost episode?
Love it. Who would be the... Whose perspective would it be?
Claire.
Yep, 1,000%. I was like, that's a Claire episode. all right, Neil.
I'm trying to think of... I would do like a Catherine Bigelow Lost episode, and it would be like an action chase across the jungle episode.
Yeah, love it.
And it would this would be part of my desire to go back and redo an Ana Lucia episode.
Oh.
But with like a, you know.
Yeah, a Catherine Bigelow Ana Lucia episode.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Love it.
Do you have a pick or did you conveniently not ask yourself?
First of all, how dare you? Secondly, I was thinking David Lynch because, like, I feel like the Aronofsky choice is like
David Lynch, and it's a Walt episode.
It's like a Goop episode. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. a Lock gets gooped kind of episode.
It's an episode about Walt.
Coming out of the computer, yeah, just coming out.
But now I'm trying to look at 2006 movies to see like who was working in 2006 that I think would be like even better. And
Mick G.
I don't know.
Yeah, like Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, Alfonso Cuarón.
He did Children of Men in 2006.
He did. Scorsese's doing The Departed. Del Toro did Pan's Labyrinth. Nolan.
Yeah,
Christopher Nolan. this is the year he did The Prestige, which is still my favorite Christopher Nolan movie. So maybe the Nolans, the Nolan bros. Jonah gets to write the episode, Christopher gets to direct it.
That's it. Yeah, they would have so many different hashes in there. Uh-huh. They'd be like, oh, so by the time we're on our fifth hash, we realize they've all been one hash.
Uh-huh, JK, we were in the different universe the whole time. All right. Anyway,
the time was in a loop in the hatch. Uh-huh. And you saw the scenes out of order because montage isn't part of traditional narrative. Hoody ho.
Hoody ho. All right. Wait. I have one more question, which is this. It's about this episode, so I just have to remember what my question was. Oh, yes. Do you remember where you were when you first learned the word the pneumatic tubes?
It would have been a movie.
No, bank drive through. Absolutely. 100%.
Oh, maybe bank drive through.
Because the mom puts the check in the tube and you have a whole bunch of questions about it because candy comes out when the check, you know, deposit slip comes back because the teller put the either dog treats or Dum Dum lollipops in the thing.
Wow. Thanks, I was memory. Thinking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Secret of the Ooze, but I think it's just because there's a canister in it. And you usually put a canister in a pneumatic tube.
That is definitely high on the list of where I might have learned the word canister.
Yeah.
I learned the phrase or the words pneumatic tube from an episode of the NBC sitcom Just Shoot Me with David Cross. Who, I mean, it's not an episode that I think would hold up, but David Cross is essentially pretending to be, like, developmentally slower for, like, attention or for an easier life. And he only reveals it to Laura San Giacomo's, I don't think I nailed the pronunciation of that woman's name, her character. So at one point, they're talking about pneumatic tubes. Like, I'm sorry. I hope this is coming across. It probably isn't. But anyway, David Cross, he's like pretending to be, you know, dimmer than he is or whatever. And like, they're talking about the pneumatic tubes and like, so the characters are trying to explain how it works and they're all wrong. And he's like, no, pneumatic tube. He's like trying to say, anyway, wow. Nailed that anecdote. Let's move on.
They can't all be being drug yep. face first through a lake.
They're not all water falling anecdotes. All right.
I have a question to get back to this episode. If we weren't so into this type of Lost episode, I think, maybe I'm speaking personally, but I'm going to throw it to you guys next, where we get like some lore, we get a character-centric flashback that is like, I think, ambiguous, the good kind of like ambiguous mystery. And I think it all comes at a good time in the season, but narratively, the pursuit of Henry Gale is, sort of pushed to the wayside, by Echo having this dream and us, you know, centering on the Echo-centric episode. Did it feel like a weird swerve that by the end of the episode, like, they come back to the hatch and no one's like, what happened to the guy you were tracking that you were supposed to rush out into the jungle to find?
I think it feels like a weird swerve at the beginning. It's like, there is a little, sort of shock to all of a sudden now we're in, like, a Echo's dream. Because even from the first moments of this episode, we can tell that there's something wrong because we know Ana Lucia just got shot. She's not standing on the beach talking to him. So I feel like then is sort of, it feels like the show is sort of pushing us off into a different direction. But I think by the end it makes sense. The show really needs a way to get Locke and Echo having more conversations because, I think as you pointed out earlier, Locke can't have the argument with Jack at the moment because Jack's got other things going on. So he needs to find someone where they'll be on a different side than him to have this argument. So I think that they kind of need to get those characters back together to create a situation in which, you know, Locke is now on the sort of non-believing sciencey side, or at least on the cynical, like none of this matters side, by the end of this episode. But no, I think by the end of the episode, it makes a lot of sense why they went through Echo. But at the beginning, it's like, it's a little disorienting that they jump right into like, his dream, essentially. It's been a while since we've seen a good dream, right?
Yeah, no, it has an excellent dream. And then I also think, I also like the dynamic in the hatch where it's been a while on the show since we've known someone is like obviously lying because we've seen the truth. And like that tension coming back makes for good tension. It's frustrating tension, but I don't think, you know, like Libby bleeding out before she could get across the message that Michael shot her and Michael hanging around the, you know, hatch, yeah, having a few lines asking how Libby is without trying to like give it away. All that works for me in a way that two characters like willfully withholding information doesn't, and actually manages to sort of balance the tension out. I think this episode works really well, but I'm just, it like watching it as a rewatch instead of watching it week to week means that this is right up against, you know, four shots in the hatch. And it seems like, the immediate, want of the audience at this point would be to figure out how that situation is going to resolve itself. And instead we pivot to, a different kind of loss that I also really like, which involves like them getting into the Pearl Station and just shot after silent shot with no dialogue between John and Locke of them just discovering things that are just mysteries. Mm-hmm. If the episode starts with a whole bunch of flashes for Echo's dream, and if that wasn't, you know, getting you to pause your TiVo, then everything in the Pearl Station is just like question upon question upon question.
The most 2006 thing about this episode of this podcast is that the TiVo mention Dave just made.
that's would have been how it went. But yeah, it was looking back on it, the flow of the whole season, like now we're, you know, in the end game, it feels weird to take a step off of the end game to do something a little bit more ponderous, but works like gangbusters because Lost knows how to structure an episode at this point, to, you know, right when they have me looking left, they're like, ooh, but here's another station over on the right. And I'm like, ooh, damn it.
How about another mystery?
I'm addicted to them finding hatches. And here's like a Boone cliff where he fell, and then like we were reminded of the gooping. It's like this episode, it's like the episode was listening to the podcast. But it did feel weird to me, at least starting it, that we were immediately refocused on Echo rather than like Henry Gale, he's gone. He's just, Henry Gale is not in the episode. Fun fact. We just traded him for, Michael.
Yep. We just swapped him out.
Joanna, did any of that read to you as odd, or did the siren song of the episode bring you to the cliff's edge?
Well, I mean, I think that I think the suspense of like not knowing whether or not Libby was going to make it, I mean, I guess we kind of blew that in our last episode where we were like, this is Cynthia Wadros is dead, because this episode's like, is Libby going to make it? And we were like, oh, we already talked about that. No. But the tension of like, is she going to,
is she going to survive long enough to like out Michael?
Incriminate Michael. Yeah. I was trying to think of a word other than finger, because I don't like that, but that is the thing that they say, like finger Michael. Anyway, yeah, incriminate reveal Michael. There we go. And you know, what is Michael going to do about it? And also it just preserves the mystery of like, we're another week gone and we still don't know quite why Michael did what he did, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fine with that. I'm fine with the wait. I mean, I appreciate that Echo's like, I don't know, and Echo doing this to Locke is so fun because it's like exactly what Locke would do to someone else. Mm-hmm. Locke would be like, the island mystery is way more important than this double homicide.
Remember when Locke...
Ana Lucia wants us to go. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Remember when Boone fell off the cliff and Locke carried him back and dropped him off and left to go hang out at the hatch?
Exactly. Classic.
Now he's like, aren't you sure you want to go say goodbye to that woman I just met a couple days ago?
And especially because like, of all the people who knew Ana Lucia, like Echo was probably the closest to her.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't feel like, It felt like only Echo could get away with this because we know it's not that he doesn't care about her. It's that he thinks, you know, there's something, a higher purpose to be served here, you know?
Sure.
So.
Also, he's got to follow Yemi.
Yeah. Sure. That troublemaker Yemi. Yeah, so it doesn't bother me.
Good old dream Yemi.
The flashback bothers me. The on-island stuff actually doesn't bother me that much.
But the flash- Why does the flashback bother you?
Because it's like, it's a whatever flashback. What does it really What does it really tell us about Echo?
Well, I mean, nothing really, but it's a genre flashback, and it's really quick. You're in, it is, you know, quick. You're in Exorcist Light mode for the entire flashback, and they don't dwell on it. So I'm okay with it. I actually could think, like, in a different world, I would want more of this from Lost, which is like, lead into some genre pastiche while you're at it. Give us a scene where a coroner explains to a priest how the girl he was cutting open comes alive. Like, you know, that I think that works. I see what you're saying. That doesn't really tell us anything about Echo, but it does. It doesn't outlast its welcome for me. I'm into seeing three scenes of Echo as priest. I mean, I'm not psyched to be back at the airport. But other than that,
I just don't think it worked. I think, you know, when we talk about, and I love the character of Echo. But when we talk about characters where they sort of wrote themselves into a corner with their backstory, like Charlie, I feel like they did that with Echo because we watched. So like Echo was like a crime lord, basically, mm-hmm. until like right before Yemi got on that plane, which was not that long ago, right? And so then we have a very short window to sort of delve in, unless we want to explore, because we watch him go through this emotional catharsis with like what happened with Yemi, right? And he's like, am I a good man? And like all this sort of stuff. Like we already watched this like big important transition. And so we don't really want to go back to like the before times with Echo, right? And so then we're just left with like him pretending to be a priest. Until he gets on the flight. And I guess this is something that you could do with that. But other than, like, I just don't, like, it feels like that moment with Yemi was a big moment in his life, and then the plane crash happened. And, like, this thing that happened in between just feels a little inconsequential to me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could believe, I agree with you that maybe taking it up to flight H-15 was too much, because there are hints in this episode that maybe he would just go to America and become, like, some sort of criminal priest. Which I think could be another interesting flashback episode, but we brought him.
A criminal priest.
He lives in Des Moines and he does crime, but no one suspects him because he's the African priest. Nah, I don't know what network that would be on. It would have to be better. Anyway, but yeah, I guess
USA,
what you're saying about.
Characters welcome.
Fair. Definitely in middle 2006. I don't know. Question marks flashback works for me just cause it's brief. Neil, what's the most important part of flashback for you? What did we learn? Was it about Echo? Was it about Claire? Was it about life after death?
Well, I think it's about, you know, all of Lost presents each of its characters, it seems, with some sort of test of either their faith or their commitment to something. You know, it's constantly testing Jack's commitment to like fixing things. So this is a weird one where it like sort of, the flashback sort of tests Echo's faith. In that, it sort of proves to him, I guess it's his moment where he begins believing maybe in the supernatural, because he seems pretty skeptical at the beginning of the flashback. Seems ready to go along with the whole idea that no, this girl did not die and then come back, and you know, we'll just leave it at that. So I think it's possible that this could be seen as something that informs how much faith he brings to the island. I just think that with a lot of things related to Mr. Echo, it just, at least so far, feels sort of underdeveloped. You know, like they I don't know. But it's fine because he ends up having a really great conversation with John, and it sort of gets him to where he needs to go. But yeah, I don't know if there's as much value there other than it's weird. It's weird. And it's weird that it's Claire's guy, right?
Right. Yeah. Cause that sparks a bunch of questions about like the Claire episode in a way.
Right.
Cause it doesn't feel like
the way they presented, what's this guy's name?
Richard Melkin.
Richard. Yeah. Old Richie.
The Ricky Melkin.
Fortune teller. Yeah.
fortune teller.
So, you know, the Rich Stradamus over here.
Yeah.
I think we were meant to believe that he knew something in the Claire episode. Like, he saw something. And then in this, he's telling Echo that he's a total fraud. And that's why his daughters and wife are like, or that's why his wife is behaving in this way. And that's, you know, I don't know. I guess why he wants the whole thing with his daughter to go away. Yeah, there are some narrative holes in this one, but otherwise I think it's a very strong, like, third from the end, of a season episode.
I just love Echo and I love spending time with him. So,
I mean, I would trade a flashback that is 100 times more clunky and boring, just to have that scene where Echo and John find the hatch. And like, just to have that moment where like Locke is like, hey, do you mind if I open the hatch? You know, like, cause like, I love hatches. Like, hatches are like,
this is my thing, man.
This is my number one thing, is opening mysterious doors in a jungle. So like all of that just is so beautiful and perfect. And, you know, it's good stuff.
Am I misremembering, or does, when they watch that, doesn't Echo say, like, do you want to watch it again? And Locke's like, I've seen enough.
Yeah.
Like that nice, a nice little follow up to like, we're going to have to watch that again.
Really? It crushed John's spirit so hard to learn, at least as far as he knows, that is a psychological experiment.
Would you say that, like, despite all of his rage, John Locke is still just like a rat in a cage?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what he learned? Wow.
Yeah. One of my favorite production details from this, fun fact, is that when Echo is doing in the dream, he has a limp. And that's like one of the keys to know that it's not Echo that's dreaming in the second dream. Sorry. In the one where it's John's dream. But like, he's a limp in the same leg that John has in, I guess, the real world in that scene. It's great. It's just great stuff. Little details.
Oh, and the Teresa goes up the stairs episode.
Yeah. Yeah. When he climbs in the dream.
Uh-huh,
yeah. And it turns out to be Locke having the dream.
Right.
The thing that, through me this episode is Hurley comes up to Sawyer and Kate and is like, hey, have you seen Libby? And that's when, you know, Hurley learns about Libby and it's very sad.
And Sawyer's just like, wah, wah.
Which is interesting, except they came upon the hatch at night and found Libby and Michael, and then they went back to the beach and it was day. How long has Hurley been waiting for Libby? If she's not on the beach, don't you check the hatch? There's only... Do you think she went to the caves?
Or maybe he thought she, like, stood him up and, like, thought better of it or something.
Oh, and just, like, spent a night sleeping, thinking that she's, like, avoiding him. Like,
I mean, that's not out of the realm of...
No, I agree.
You know, he was probably sad.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, there's only what? To their knowledge, about 40 people on this island. So you could maybe do like one walk of the beach to make sure she's okay. It's more of a safety issue at that point. And then obviously, because look what happened.
Yeah. Anyway, that day to night threw me tonight today. But I guess you're right. I guess it should just be even sadder than I was giving it credit for, and not a production.
The Hurley thing is so sad.
The Hurley thing is really sad. And then him talking to Michael about it makes it even sadder. But I like I was saying before, I like that new wrinkle of drama of having Michael around. And both, we don't know what his play is, but he also seems sad sometimes. Yeah, and then at the end, he seems like he still has, there's something else to do with his plan. Because he's looking a lot more serious over Annalisa, Annalisa's body. Oh, What's up with Michael? Maybe we'll find out next week.
I just think once again, Harold Perrineau is like slaying it in this episode, you know, like,
He has like four lines in this episode, but he's ever present in the hatch.
He's just standing in the shadows looking like angsty.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty great.
All right, let's do some corners before we get to our interview and the storm. Our jungle mystery moment goes to Dr. Mark Wickman, question mark? That's not the Dr. Martin Candle we remember from orientation. Really everything in the Pearl is just a big question mark. There's a log that seems to be been paying attention to the numbers that gets printed and brought back, which means we'll probably have to deal with it.
There's a pneumatic tube.
Pneumatic tube. There's cigarette butts. There are multiple screens. And then there are supposed to be notebooks, but apparently they ran out of notebooks. Because all that gets sent up the pneumatic tube is Locke's hand-drawn map. The Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to the poor girl who fell into a mountain river. It caused some hypothermia. That
I believe
made
her name
present
is
dead.
I believe her name is Charlotte.
It is.
Who cares?
It is.
I mean, okay, Charlotte.
Let's just say. I feel like we can say this. This is not the last Charlotte we'll meet on Lost, and I just think it's a little weird that her there are enough names in the world that she didn't need to be named Charlotte, you know?
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Or have a name? Like, how do we know? Does he say, like, Charlotte, get back in the house?
He's like,
yeah,
Emily Rose.
They mention it.
Yeah, Emily Rose, get back in the house.
I think they mention it a couple times, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Well, Charlotte's got a name, and she gets the Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award in an episode where they remember Boone Carlyle falling down. Accent corner. We have an accent corner. Joanna,
gosh,
hook us up.
We've got a whole Australian family, all right?
There's a buffet of accents.
Okay, so I can't remember if we did old Ricky Melk's The Fortune Teller last
time. I feel like we probably did.
Okay, we're just going to do them again because I couldn't remember the answer. So Nick Jameson, who plays Ricky Melk's, is this a bona fide Australian, Neil?
I think yes.
Dave?
No, because he's not Australian in Arrested Development, right?
Is he in Arrested Development?
He's Charlize Theron's handler.
Is he?
Oh my god, really?
I think.
It's not on his list. He was on Alias and he was on Twitter.
Oh no, so maybe it's just the actor who looks a lot like that. I'm gonna look up the other one, but go ahead and answer the accent question.
He's not Australian. He is from
Woo
Philadelphia.
Hey, right. That's close.
And then his lovely wife, Joyce Malkin, played by Melissa Bickerton. Is Melissa Bickerton Australian, Dave?
Yes.
Neil?
I'm going with no. I've been burned before.
This is a bona fide Australian. Fun fact about Melissa Bickerton. I feel like Bickerton's a very Australian last name. Fun fact about...
It sounded very British to me.
About Melissa. Her nickname is Bliss. Isn't that fun? Don't you
wow.
don't you wish your nickname was Bliss? All right. And then we get to Charlotte herself, Brooke Anderson, who has her own nickname, but which we'll get to. Is Brooke Anderson Australian? Neil.
Well, let's see if I can be wrong thrice. I'm going to go with yes.
Okay. Dave.
Then I'm going to take no.
Brooke Mikey Anderson is absolutely Australian. I feel like they learned their lesson. And so, like, so Richard Malkin is an import from season one when they were like, we can just hire anyone to do an Australian accent, right? And maybe they got enough feedback on 4 billion beans. They were like,
or they just ooh. Like, oh, season two, we got enough money to fly people in yeah. who aren't the main cast.
But I think I want to see if Brooke Anderson was an ocean girl. Did you look up Charlize Theron's handler from Arrested Development?
Yes, it is Dave Thomas, the comedian. I can't believe I did not.
Dave
I got
Thomas
confused
is a very
with,
famous person.
Yes, no, he is. He is a very famous person that in that Arrested Development series, looks a lot like Richard Malkin, the psychic.
That's fair. I can see that. Dave Thomas, not to be confused with Dave Thomas, who owned Wendy's.
Right. Correct.
Dave Thomas
from Strange Brew.
Yes.
Yeah.
Doug McKenzie.
SCTV. Yeah. All right. Cool, cool, cool. Well, those are the Milkins, a mixed bag of Milkins.
mixed bag of Milkins. Zombie Milkins. Mm-hmm. The Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a light award, goes to Michael this week, who says he shot me. Shot yourself, Michael. Yeah. Okay, let's do this. This week, it's time for a Jungle of Kistery. We need to decide which two of these characters we need to kiss. Joanna, do we have a pick from our Slack family?
Yes, our Slack fam, Ira and Slack, decided that Locke and Mr. Echo, sort of one point they're in the firelight and their faces are getting awfully close, and she was like, kiss, kiss, kiss. Anyway, so she says it's the men of faith themselves, Locke and Echo.
Man of faith kiss. I'm going to pick Dream Yemi and Locke as Echo in the dream.
Oh.
So it's like a brother kiss, but Locke experiences the brother kiss. I like it.
Okay.
Neil, who are you picking?
Well, I'm taking Michael and the computer, because there's some really intense intercutting there at the end where it's like Michael's glaring off into space, the computer's blinking and beeping, and that computer has served Michael well in the past by connecting
his
him
son's
with
in
Walt.
There
so
you gotta get him out.
You know what? They've tried shooting the computer. They've tried pressing the buttons. They should try making out with the computer to see what happens.
Kiss. Horse.
Kiss. That would have been a great last shot of this episode. Kiss? Question mark. Joanna, who's kissing?
When Mr. Echo wakes up, who's right there next to him? But his beach snuggle buddy, his partner in carpentry, his the altar boy to his man of faith. It is Charlie Mr. Echo. So yeah, I put Charlie and Snuggle Buds, Echo and Charlie.
All good choices.
All great choices. I mean, a lot of Echo. Fair enough. It's his episode and a computer. Like, what more could you ask for?
Yeah. Make sure you're following us at Storm Podcast on Twitter, to vote on our Jungles of Kisteries. We have added a segment, for the past couple of episodes called Where's Libby? Where we are pretending that Libby's in all the flashbacks. This week, not as funny, segment because she is actually in the flashback.
We don't have to guess. Airport. Libby is in the flashback.
We found
her.
We found her.
In the airport.
It's not where's Libby. It's there's Libby.
There's Libby in the flashback. All right. Official podcast check-in. During this time when Lost was airing, they were actually doing an official podcast where the showrunners would answer questions and give insight into the episodes. This week's selection is about where they're at in actual production and how fast the end of season two came together. Neil, you want to read this one with me again?
Yes, I love being Damon Lindelof.
All right, so I'll be Carlton Cuse, and you'll be Damon Lindelof. Here we go. In fact, we're actually have been working with the writers on season three already and doing a little what we call mini camp, where we're actually in Hawaii last week with the entire season three writing staff, sort of planning out in a little bit more detail what our stories are going to be for season three.
That should be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to season three.
I can tell. I think you'll be looking forward a little bit more when you get back from your vacation.
Exactly. Well, we're in the midst of editing the finale as well right now. So, you know, as just in terms of being behind the scene of a behind the scenes peek at things, and I know this isn't about 3 minutes, you know, we finished shooting the finale just about 2 days ago, and
in fact, we're actually shooting pickup shots today for the finale.
And it'll air, you know, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, 2 weeks from the day that we finish shooting it. So that's a fairly compressed time period for all of our amazing crew to do their effects and Michael Giacchino to write his score. And
we have 4 editors cutting it, and you know, it's gonna be good. We're very excited about it.
So that explains why Carlton is not as funny today as he usually is. I'm trying to do
you. Oh, you're a barrel of laughs today yourself.
Have I told you that story where I met Michael Giacchino when he was scoring what's the Drew Goddard film, Bad Times at the El Royale? And I was there on the day that they were like recording the score, or one of the days. And since Drew Goddard and Giacchino both worked on Lost, they were talking about like the leisurely pace of making a film versus making Lost. And like at one point, Drew Goddard's like, I asked Drew Goddard like how much time they had to turn around like script pages or whatever. And he like just turned to Michael Giacchino and asked him. Michael Giacchino just started laughing. Like this deep, haunted, traumatic laugh. Like, I had to score full episodes of Lost, like, in a day, basically, or whatever. So, yeah.
Which is why, so we can see why he cut some corners on the song titles there for a while.
I don't know. I think Giacchino thought he was, like, being, a barrel of laughs himself. That's why... I think that's why it's just like mostly season one, and then the rest of Lost is like a lot of variations on season one. Oh, the traveling theme. Here we are again. We're traveling.
Do, 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 do.
It's Jack's theme, but with a little twist.
Oh, someone's saying goodbye. Ah, someone's back from having been missing for a while, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah.
All right.
Gotta make the Lego blocks of the theme and build the episode out of it. This week we've got a returning guest, Joanna. Who are we talking to for our interview?
Oh my god, my pal and yours, David Sims. He requested this episode months and months and months ago. Last time he was on, he like staked his claim for his season 2 episode, and he has already staked his claim for his season 3 episode, and it is a surprising one. And I can't remember if he says that in this interview or in the bonus podcast we have coming later this week, but he has declared his love for a season 3 episode. He will be back to talk about it. But here's David Sims talking about Aronofsky, Mr. Echo, Michael, and the rest. All right, we are welcoming back to the podcast the great David Sims, host of the Blank Check podcast, writer extraordinaire at The Atlantic. I don't know your official title over there. What's your official title at The Atlantic, David Sims?
They call me a staff writer over there.
I prefer writer extraordinaire.
Sure.
Not heard from on this podcast since season 1, episode Homecoming. And yes. If I recall correctly, we were towards the end of our season 1 coverage, and you were like, Joanna, what the heck? I love Lost. Why aren't you inviting me on your Lost podcast?
And I said, that sounds about right.
And I said, David Sims, we only have these few episodes left. And you were like, woof, a Charlie episode. No, thank you. But you did it anyway, and you did a great job. And then you were like, I want to pick my season 2 episode now. And this was like... many, 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 many months ago. And I said, okay, go for it. And you said, I want to do ? Which is what we would call this episode, I suppose. The artist formerly known as ? I don't know. I think of Prince when I think of just a symbol for something.
Because a weirdly difficult episode to Google.
true. Because of your love for Mr. Echo and for John Locke. So,
yes.
David Sims, are you feeling good about talking about this episode?
I am, but I will say on rewatch, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that the hype for this episode was so colossal, and I remember how excited I was to like see a new station and to get a new Echo episode. But now watching it, I was like, oh right, I forgot that the B plot of this movie is just characters dying of this episode.
And you're like, oh, I just get to watch Jorge Garcia be sad for
yeah,
and Michael be guilty. Walk me through that. The hype around this, like, how much did we know as viewers back in 2006 going into this
episode? Right. Well, so like, I feel like season two is when Lost fandom was at its most feverish, because the show was still just like a colossal hit that everyone watched. And every, you know, week, everyone was sort of just like, hey, this is before I feel like the third season is where I feel like people start to fall off and the fandom gets a little more hardcore. And a lot of the sort of casual viewers are like, ah, that show never went anywhere. I gave up on that one. But like season two, everyone is just still all in. And this episode, very late, obviously, in the season. So, you know, hoping for big revelations, had the sort of double whammy of like focusing on the coolest new character, Echo, who I feel like is the new character that everyone had glommed onto the most, and promising us like to reveal the question mark in the middle of this map, which had become such an object of internet fascination. Like, do you remember at the time, like, people were like pausing their like standard def, you know, viewings of Lost on that map to try and figure out like every single little Easter egg that might have been written into the wall.
We were when we were covering that episode specifically, Lockdown, I was looking at some of those original like sort of blurry screen caps that people had, and I'm like, you can't read anything, like, and like a bunch of it's in Latin, so like what are you supposed to be able to decipher? So yeah, I mad respect to the internet detectives back in the day, because they had much harsher conditions to operate under. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't remember any of that contextual hype.
There were articles. It wasn't just rumor. There were articles that, like, Darren Aronofsky, who I believe at this time, I guess, is coming off making The Fountain. I think that's where he is in his career. Or maybe The Fountain is about to come out. It's right around then. But Darren Aronofsky, director of Pi and Requiem for a Dream, was their like choice to direct this episode, and they courted him, and it didn't work out because, like, I don't know, he was busy. Like,
according,
he couldn't.
According to Wikipedia, it's because Rachel Weisz was pregnant.
Oh, there you go. Wow, that is a blast from the past. But so that's why Lindelof said that the homage to, it was an homage to Pi, the movie Pi, which is a symbol, to have the episode called question mark. And like, it's funny to think about that, you know, Darren directing this episode, because yes, of course, like the more dreamlike Mr. Echo stuff and the weirdness of the Pearl Station, like, sure, there's plenty he could go around with there, but then also having to hand him like, hey, you're gonna have to deal with the death scene of this character who you've like probably know very little about. Her name is Libby, and everyone kind of agrees on her, but she doesn't really have like a big personality.
we dropped this like insane like twist ending to an episode a couple weeks ago that she was actually in the mental institution with Hurley. But we don't know anything really about her. That's her entire personality. So yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's interesting to try to, because there isn't, is there an episode of Lost that feels like especially stylized directorially to you? Like, I can't think of one that feels like visually
that different from all the other episodes. No, I don't think so. I mean, it's sort of the it's episodic television. I mean, like, you know, if you're making your prestige show that's 10 episodes or whatever, you can maybe pull something like that off. But like, they were on a treadmill. They had to make one of these every, you know, 8 or 9 days, and they were out there in Hawaii. Like, I don't like, I, there's only so much weirdness they could indulge visually. Obviously, there's plenty of storytelling weirdness.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So like, so they're two main directors, I would say, are Jack Bender and Stephen Williams, right?
Right.
And Bender is obviously best known for like the emotionality that he pulls out of like performances, like even in episodes that aren't that great. We just got done discussing the episode Dave, which is about you know, Hurley and his imaginary friend and blah blah blah. And like that episode, upon reflection, is pretty problematic for the way in which it deals with like disordered eating and mental issues. That being said, Jorge Garcia's performance is like,
is quite lovely,
over the top, fantastic in my opinion.
Yeah.
So like, and that's a Bender touch. And then Stephen Williams, like, what's interesting is Stephen Williams, who has been a guest on this podcast, like went on to direct one of the most visually dazzling episodes of television last year in the episode of Watchmen, which had that like black and white sort of dreamy in and out of reality situation. So like, so he can do it, you know, if he wants to, extremely stylized. But as you say, they're making so many episodes. And this was before, you know, like, a lot of like, you know, the fact that they wanted Aronofsky to direct this, like, that's not, that was so uncommon, especially for a network,
especially for networks.
To have a film director come in and do an episode of television, you know?
I think it speaks to one, the ambition of the show, which is obviously there from the beginning, and it was a very ambitious and expensive and cinematic show, but also just, I feel like how intense the hype was going into season two, that you can just imagine Lindelof and Cuse being like, let's ask Darren Aronofsky if he wants to do an episode, you know, like just sort of. And I remember I was an avid listener of their podcast, which I feel like has been scrubbed from the internet. Like, does it exist? Like, is there any way to listen to those old episodes? I listened to those episodes on my iPod. Nice. On my iPod.
Why it's called a podcast. Yeah, you can find them. And actually, one of our listeners is currently like gathering them all in an RSS feed. So if you're part of our Patreon, you have access to a little RSS feed of the official Lost podcast. But like,
I remember them talking about it on that. I think that's where I picked this up from.
Well, and I mean, you know, Lindelof is this huge Twin Peaks fan, right? So the idea, like, this is whenever the show gets like kind of peaksy, which I would say this episode is, at least in its dream sequences.
Sure.
I could see how, like, if you're sitting there in 2006 or 2005 when you're making this episode, and you know, maybe David Lynch is unavailable, you're like, look, yeah, sure. Aronofsky. That sounds about similar. I mean,
I'd love to see it, but I have no idea what he would have brought to this, really, because it's actually a very exposition-y and sort of plotty episode, despite the dreamy title and some of the dreamy sequences. Like, this is actually more of a sort of like, okay, we're going to put a bunch of chips on the table to get us closer to the finale.
True, but on the other hand, like, thematically, this episode, I think more than any other we've seen, gets at the core of what I think a lot of Lost is about, is this, like, not even, like, what is faith? That sounds so, like, you know, empty. But, like, why have faith in something? Is it because you have proof of something, or do you have faith just to have faith in something? What does faith mean? How does faith nourish you in that way? You know what I mean? And it's like, for John, he needs to have that. He has lost his season one certainty. And in season two, like, you know, he's been shaken to his core by Henry Gale being like, oh, I didn't press the button and nothing happened, John. What up? I'm in your head, sort of thing. Right. And so he doesn't know where he is. And Echo's like, that's not why we do it. We do it to do it. You know,
John is right. John's very American. He wants like a sign. He wants like, you know, if X, then Y. He's very sort of instant gratification about this stuff. Whereas Echo is like, no, man, like, right. It's a discipline. Like, you know, everything is a discipline. And like, you know, you believe because you believe.
What works best for you in this episode of television, David Sims?
I mean, what works best for me is something that I've just always loved about this show, which is all of the Dharma aesthetics. I love the sort of, you know, like, you know, if the sort of Milgram experiment or whatever, like, you know, the not Milgram experiment, but like the sort of like rabbit pushing a button experiment of the swan is that first, you know, aesthetic that you brought in. Then with the pearl, I like the little mind fuckery of like, oh, it's just, you know, game within a game. And that's another kind of sort of like, you know, rat in a cage type experiment that you do associate with that sort of 70s, 80s time frame. And I like the progression of like, you know, the reel to reel movie for the Swan to the VHS for the Pearl. Like, as I remember when I was watching this at the time, I was so invested, not even in finding out what was up with the Dharma Initiative, because I don't know that that really matters. I get that there would be weird scientists on a magic island. I just was so invested with the weird progression of all of their industry on the island. So I love, I love all that. I love the weird philosophical and psychological implications of the pearl. That's great.
Okay, what's not great for you?
The Echo flashback is like sort of half perfunctory, half like almost sort of willfully annoying. Like, it's, I mean, do you, am I out of line here, or do you agree with me?
Well, it's tough because, so we just had our first Echo flashback, like, I feels like just a couple episodes ago. Like,
sure.
Okay. So this episode is, this season is so interesting, right? Because you get the Tailies, you're stuck in this like weird Ana Lucia rut for like three episodes where you all this Ana Lucia stuff.
Yes.
And you get an Echo flashback, and it's good. I really like the first Echo.
One's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a very exciting episode, and you see the sort of pillar of smoke and all, you know, that I remember that being a really pivotal episode.
So for them to like go to another Echo flashback so quickly, you know, it feels like they hadn't really fully figured out what, you know, I was talking to Adam Horowitz and Ed Kitsis, who wrote Dave and you know, ton of other Lost episodes. And they were saying, we always thought of the flashbacks as like a little New Yorker story. I never heard it described that way, but I was like, okay, so let me think about now that they've said that, let me think about every episode I watch. Like, if I pull out the flashback story, independent of how it relates to the island story, is this a satisfying story on its own? And
that's
like
a fair bit of judgment. Yes.
Right. And like, you know, this is like, I don't know, what, Exorcism of Emily Rose, like Alien Autopsy,
right?
Like, what is, you know, what am I watching here? You know, there is that like, whoa, what the heck? It's the psychic who told Claire, and now he's calling himself a fraud. Like,
that's what I have no patience for.
Yeah. Because then, like, I don't think that, you know, no spoiler, but I don't know that we're supposed to believe him. Like, that's never clear to me. Like, the status of the psychic and Claire, you know what I mean?
It's one of those things that feels, I love Lost, and I do love, you know, the ways they would try to sort of link things together and tie things in interesting directions in the flashbacks and all that. But like, it just felt like they were like, I don't know, what if we had the psychic pop up and like behave in an entirely opposite way from last time?
Yeah.
And really as an Easter egg rather than as something meaningful. And like, that's just like, that kind of like,
but it has
burns
such
my cannolis.
Yeah, and it has such meaningful ramifications, because like, you know, it can exist just as an Easter egg, because if he's like, I'm a fraud, I find out things about people and I tell them, and I'm like, okay, so does that has ramifications for Claire's journey, right?
Yeah.
And so you can't just, but there are, you know, often when they do that, when they're like, okay, we need someone to walk in here, what if it's someone we know? Like, oftentimes, like, it works well for me when Libby does it, right? When it's Libby busting up the, like, fight in the airport. I'm like, well, that's fine.
Yes.
There's Libby. Okay. You know, or sometimes it's extremely meaningful, like Sawyer running into Jack's dad in a bar. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Love that stuff.
Like, that's great. But yeah, you have to be...
It just feels a little cute. It just feels a little, like, a bit of, you know, spice for a kind of undercooked, you know, flashback story. That's my question about Libby, who dies in this episode, is why does she die in this episode? That's because has someone explained that? Like, you know, like,
no.
Why?
Yeah, it's still a big mystery. I got the writers that I talked to for Dave, they, like, I was like, why? Because what no one has ever officially said is why she was even in the mental institution.
Right. And that like, is an unresolved threat.
And they were like, they said, oh, it was always our intention that she was there because her husband died and the trauma of that put her in the mental institution to like figure stuff out. And I was like, okay,
sure.
But like the question of like why Libby, you know, it's so hard because they've given official interviews and I just don't believe them. And I hate being that person. But like, you know, they said stuff like, we didn't feel like Ana Lucia's death would be sort of enough of a gut punch.
Yes.
That we wanted to put like an innocent like Libby into the mix.
Classic,
you know,
Joss Whedon move.
True, true.
Kill the sweetest character to make it, you know, to raise the stakes. But like, and you're right. I forgot about that was part of their excuse at the time, is like, we didn't think people would care about Ana Lucia dying. I'm like, well, okay, that's kind of your mistake.
Yeah, that's like, your fault, man. Why does Libby have to suffer? Because you didn't do, you know,
right.
set up this character well enough. Yeah, it's yeah.
She's not a, Libby is not a character I particularly care about, mostly because she dies, you know, before I have too much time to care about her. But, you know, yeah, it's sort of like, why invest the time if you're going to not pay it off?
I think having a therapist on the island would have been fascinating, and I would have yeah. loved to continue to have her there. Yeah, it's, and what feels clear to me is, even by the time of Dave, which is only like a few episodes before she gets shot, it feels like they still planned to do stuff with her. So it was like such a right. late in the day decision that they made.
Sucks for Cynthia Watros.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, what's interesting, I mean, and then of course there's that like unfortunate, like both Michelle Rodriguez and Cynthia Watros got DUIs right around the same time. So everyone thought it was like,
right.
the rumor started that
I forgot about that.
They got DUIs. So they were like fired. I've believed that for years before I started doing a Lost podcast. And then I was like, oh, that was just like the assumption that people made. But like,
also, there was a real spate of DUIs, right? Like a bunch of cast members got them.
Daniel DeKim got one. Yes. So yeah, the Libby of it all just feels like unnecessarily
cruel. Like it's different if like if you kill off a character and that lingers through the show, then that's a little more justifiable. And even Boone's death in season one is still hanging over the show a little bit at this point.
Yeah.
In this episode, particularly.
Yeah.
But it's not a good sign if your character is just forgotten pretty quickly.
At this point, I don't know that we talked about this last time. How do you feel about Jack Shepard generally, and maybe more specifically here in like season two of Lost?
I would say that I'm probably a mild Jack defender. Mm-hmm. If you're considering the sort of spectrum of, you know, I feel like a lot of people are very negative about that character.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
And I've always sort of, I like the performance, and it's such, it was such a type at that time, the sort of like Timothy Oliphant in Deadwood, or even frickin' Ben McKenzie in the OC, like these sort of like heroes who take it all on their back, and they, uh-huh. you know, are too hard on themselves, and they want to fix everything and they can't, and they've got daddy issues, and they've got, you know, and I think the show, by and large, is critical enough of Jack that I never minded some of his kind of, you know, more egregious emoting, and sort of like, you know, his whole arc would recur over and over and over again.
Do you think it's critical of him now, or do you think it gets there?
It gets there. Yeah. I would say right now he's basically in this kind of like de facto leader role. He's not really in on the button drama too much. Like that's more of a lock drama.
Yeah.
And so I feel like his take on the button is like, yeah, okay, whatever. I don't know. I'll think about this later. And so he's sort of, he's maybe a little adrift, because it's been kind of a while since a Jack episode, right? Because this season, I feel like, was very reactive to the complaint of season one, which had like five Jack episodes. They were like, okay, we're going to do very few Jack episodes.
Right.
And we'll have a little less of him just like completely dominating the narrative.
Yeah, there's like, three or something?
There's two.
Wow. Okay.
Just Man of Science, Man of Faith, which is probably the greatest Jack episode. Mm-hmm. Well, it's up there at least. And then The Hunting Party, which I don't remember.
That's when Sarah leaves him. Like the whole time you think right. he's gonna like cheat on her with the hot Italian, and then in the end she's like, JK Jack, I've already packed and I'm leaving you.
Right. But don't you feel like right now he's kind of in a holding pattern? Like when he's yeah. trying to save Libby, you know, and Kate's like, can we do anything? And he's just like, yeah, I don't know. Like, rather than the season one Jack where he's like, you know, pounding on people's chests and he's going to amputate Boone's leg. He's just like, Jesus, I mean, this is bad. Like, he's not being pushed into his more dynamic attitude.
All right, David Sims, you know, where can folks find you until they hear you on here again?
Well, they can find me in my apartment because that's where I live now and I never leave. But you can also find me on the internet. I'm on Twitter, David L. Sims. I host Blank Check, which is a fun podcast about movies with Griffin Newman, which you can find anywhere. And I'm at The Atlantic writing about culture.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us and stay safe.
You too, buddy. Seriously.
All right. No question marks about it. Now is the time of the podcast where we like to thank our Patreon subscribers. The small counts of living, that's our $10 and above folks who are supporting us. So I want to thank some newcomers. Natalie Olivas, Stuart Wynn, Erica Sonstrom, EW, I hope that's Entertainment Weekly. Thanks so much, Entertainment Weekly. Nicole Havelka, Tony Livingston, Fahim Ibrahim, Lauren Galbraith, Ali Karaka, Ryan Casas, Suniva Agard, Jessica Parton, Christopher Mack, Paul, Jennifer Carnivale, or maybe just Carnival, Alejandra Pozo, Sarah Finnamore, Nikki Hyde, Damon Van Vuren, and Michelle. Thank you guys so much.
And I'd like to add to that thanks, Josh, Cheryl Nelson, Mary Henderson, Amar Luz, Vanessa Marshall, Seth Freilich. Yeah, I probably even did it wrong that time, but he'll know. Corinne Ball, Jessica Scott, Matthew Wilson, Sarah Cooper, Jeff Libby, Amy Harper, Brian, Kat, Matthew Munden, Mark Rodriguez, Jessica Trowbridge, Jay Fornes, Patrick Grattan, and Melinda Lim. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following fine human beings: Sarah Wolf, Francis Adrian, Kevin Gonzalez, Jay Maggio, Eric Procyse, Arthur Wynn, Scott Rumsey, Richard Hoska, Tracy, Luke Sweet, Sheila Curran, Nate, Anthony Goel, Ralph Helm, Kelsey McKinnell, Chelsea Patchell, Adrian Martinez, Samuel Fry, Christopher McTare, and Torin Soli. Yeah, okay. Thank you guys all. All of you.
Back for another Ben Storm. Storm Ben. It gets
where is Ben?
Easier. It gets easier when he's not in the episode to not call him Ben. Neil, if you could have a television director direct any episode of Lost, of any season of Lost, who would your original pick have been?
Well, it would be an agreement, an unholy alliance.
Woo.
Wherein Brian K. Vaughan, who we will experience at some point, gets to write them, and Christopher Nolan gets to direct them.
Oh, I took care
because
of
I
care. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I was going to say Christopher Nolan because of like timey wimey stuff.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be like, because you know when they get into all that timey wimey stuff in seasons four, 3 and 4, right? Is all the timey wimey stuff. Miles and. Charlotte, other Charlotte, not zombie Charlotte, ginger Charlotte, and Daniel Faraday, they're all coming. It's just thing, you know, these are things that are coming.
Didn't they name Charlotte Charlotte so that they could call her C.S. Lewis, right? But I'm like, it could have been like Christine.
She could have been a Catherine. Oh no, we already have a Kate.
Christine.
Yeah, she could have been a Christine. Although Zombie Girl could have been literally anything else, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She could have been a Tammy. It wouldn't have mattered.
Lazara. No, maybe I shouldn't write television.
Phoenix. Her name is Phoenix.
Dave. Oh, God. Dave, what's your Stormy director?
Oh, see, I was going to go, you give... Robert Zemeckis the super flashback to Jacob and Man in Black's mother episode in season 6 and just let him do like this really weird, probably partially motion captured, like super saturated green jungle show.
Sounds really bad.
I mean, but isn't that kind of what she wants? Like, you...
No.
No?
No.
I mean, also want, being like a...
You want Ladder Zemeckis? Like...
You want
like
mocap Zemeckis?
Yeah, good old mocap Zemeckis.
Yeah, mid-2000s mocap Zemeckis is just like doesn't give a fuck.
Although mid-2000s mocap Zemeckis is a good draw for a lot of acting talent. He could always pull a Hanks out of his pocket, which is as a director, I think is a talent.
Yeah.
You know, it's like how Scorsese always walks up and has like a De Niro and a Pesci at all times whenever he's ready to
and
make a
DiCaprio
movie.
Being like, meet me this time?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Zemeckis had some draw. But
I mean, it was definitely a better answer before we all gave our calm answers and then our storm answers. Now I'm not super into the Robert Zemeckis answer because all the Nolan answers are very intriguing, and especially that period Nolan. Like instead of Dark Knight, he makes a Lost episode. Like fuck.
Or he makes a Lost episode like right as he's getting into starting to make the Dark Knight. You know, like in between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight when he was
or maybe super like, excited about the idea of Batman.
Maybe like
ideas.
Whedon and Drew get to make an episode together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See, that was my thing. Is like
Jacob's Cabin in the Woods.
I try to think of like, can I pair a writer?
Yeah, that's smart.
You know, with a director. And I think, you know, we'll get to Brian K. Vaughan when we get there.
It's just fascinating that they, and Simpson and I talked about this, but it's fascinating that they wanted Aronofsky because, like, Lost is never, like, an auteur director or experimental director show. You've got Bender and Stephen Williams, like, doing most of the work, and it's, like, a very consistent visually and tonally show.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Unless
I do like, think that,
you know, except for when Bender tries to turn the emotions up to like 200. Other than that, you know, it's pretty.
I think that there are times when Lost wants to do like a deeper atmospheric thing. And I think it comes up a lot when they're getting into some of the, you know, more faithy questions and the visions. And you know, like, you could almost see them try to do this in the Boone episode where he gets gooped, where they kind of want, like, they want to have a visual state of the show where you know instantly that you're not watching, that you're watching some sort of vision or dream, and they want it to kind of drip with atmosphere. So I can see, like, where you'd lean into an Aronofsky there, but it still feels like it would be a weird jump, you know? Like, I just feel like the episode would have been similar, but the way they would have color corrected it, the way they would have added sound, it would have been like it just more slightly more atmospheric, maybe.
I feel like it all would have been that shot where Echo looks over the cliff and it sort of does that big mm-hmm. tilt, CGI assisted tilt to see the question mark made out of the plane. Like I think it all would have.
It
been
would all
that
be
span.
Like a shot from a camera strapped to John Locke's chest.
Yeah, basically,
and at like triple speed.
Lost as a show is played so close to everybody's face. I think if you brought in like a guest director like Aronofsky or someone, the first thing they would do is be like, Let's back off of everybody a little bit.
Right. Nothing but wide shots.
Well, I feel like I'm trying to think of all the episodes that I would like be willing to see a big experiment with. And I think it's like Across the Sea is obviously a good one. Exposé actually might be a good one. or like Danny Boyle's Stranger in a Strange Land or whatever. No,
Danny Boyle's Stranger in a Strange Land.
Wait, is that what that's called? That's the tattoo episode, right?
Yeah,
I feel like I'm on crazy pills. Sorry. Okay, yeah, like the beach, but Jack gets a tattoo.
But Jack gets a tattoo.
Is there anything else? Like, is there any other episode where you feel like they would have had like fun with the form? Abaterno, maybe. You know.
Yeah. I mean, it's the maybe part of the reason that specifically this week, I don't know if this is good podcast material or not, but we're going to do it because this is how people watch television, especially when they're all locked inside. This week's Westworld had a premise that there was a party drug that would make you live out different film genres, which sounds great.
Doesn't it?
But then the way they execute it is by changing the saturation on shots that are
barely
the same.
Barely. I mean,
yeah, and some, oh, sorry, music cues. Yeah,
I recognized a genre. Just,
which genre did you recognize?
There was one that was like sappy romantic.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like the only one where I was like, oh, I know this. Yeah, that was the most obvious one. And like the rest of the, well, I guess film noir. Film noir and the romance were the ones where I'm like, you almost got there.
Yeah.
And everything else, I'm like, what are you doing?
As a concept, I love that, but I think I would have wanted it to be more magical.
Just like, go for it, right?
That's another thing that, you know, you sort of wish in these, and maybe this is what the showrunners were wishing as well when they were like, yeah, let's get Darren Aronofsky to direct this episode, is like, I wish we could make the dream stuff a little more vivid, you know, or sort of more disorienting for the audience. And it never quite gets there. It's really just like, usually it just looks like washed out with light, you know, it's super bright lights and stuff.
It's Peaks light. You know what I mean? Like it's Twin Peaks light or Legion light or whatever. You know what I mean? Like Legion really, and you know, that episode of Watchmen, the nostalgia episode of Watchmen, like, really showed us what you can do if you're just really going for it. You know what I mean?
So,
that's what I'm looking for when I say let Robert Zemeckis do something that seems dumb in the middle of season 6 of Lost. That's the kind of thrill that I want.
Wait, so what was
because I would have loved to
you're
even be in the middle of
You're almost
genre.
Looking for like the claymation episodes of Community level
yes,
of
yes.
deviance here.
Yeah, yeah, just like do it and it's part of the thing and people are like, man, that one episode of Lost you could just leave out because right now it's like Stranger in a Strange Land or something because it's bad. Wouldn't it be great if it was because it was weird?
I mean, I think the issue is like The Constant is actually an episode that is really begging for something like that, but The Constant is such a near perfect episode of Lost that it's hard to like, you don't want to boot Bender off that project. But like Desmond, and I think the way it's done with Desmond hopping through time is done really well. But if they wanted to go even trippier with it, I think they could have. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that our official podcast check-in was about where they were in the post-production process, which is still working, really running up against the wire. And so all of Echo's flashes this time are from episodes we've already seen. Unlike the flashes he saw at the Smoke Monster, which is stuff they wanted to do.
Right.
This time they either ran out of time or just realized they were being too cocky the first time or like, no. Let's just get some stuff of footage from footage we already have. Let's not try to like plant any seeds going forward here. So yeah, I don't know if that's production time constraints or them getting to the end of season 2 and realizing sort of how intense their secret compiling was in this episode, especially with all the stuff in the Pearl, which somewhat pays off and sometimes doesn't, depending on your view of later Pearl revelations.
I am now like obsessed with this question, and I want our listeners to write in their suggestions for like pairing directors with episodes, because I was just like looking, I just googled like the best episodes of Lost and pulled up some like whatever listicle, because I'm like, what great episodes am I forgetting? And A Tale of Two Cities, which like your mileage may vary, that's a season 3 premiere we're getting close to, but the introduction of Dharmaville and Juliet and all of that, I think that could have been done like in a really fun sort of like almost like Stepford Wivesy sort of you know, Ryan Murphy or like Desperate Housewives way or something like that. I don't know, that like weird unsettling suburbia,
almost like a Gary Ross Pleasantville sort of situation.
Yeah, love it. And then this isn't on the list, but I was just thinking about like LaFleur, which is another episode that I think you can almost take out of, and I'm like, who do I want to see do like a 70s, like, do I want to see like David Fincher's like episode of 1970s Lost,
or like Scorsese, you know? That would be the Scorsese one. the LaFleur episode.
Love
but
it.
It's like, because isn't there the whole thing about what's his name, the head of the camp at the time in the 70s,
Horace.
And his wife is Horace. So yeah, like the Horace thing would be like way darker in the Scorsese version.
I mean, we're going to have to talk about Horace when we get to Horace, because it's what's his name? A really creepy guy who plays Horace.
He's creepy.
That guy's like one Horace. Of the biggest creeps of all time. Anyway.
We have a Storm email.
Yeah, let's hit it. All right, so this one comes from Ryan. It's about Two for the Road. And it's really only Stormy for like the very end of it. So I could have read in the comm, but I didn't. So Ryan is basically like, we were sort of knocking the like super, super coincidental Ana Lucia new Christian Shepherd aspect of Two for the Road. And Ryan's a fan of it, and he talks about a couple of the connections that he likes. But his last paragraph of his email goes, the very first time we see Ana Lucia, it is in service of Jack's character. And the last time we see her, this is equally true. The similarities between Jack and Christian, their inability to communicate to one another, their regret, and their alcoholism is only contrasted by their faith or lack thereof. Christian believes fate has thrown him and Ana Lucia in the same lot. Jack vehemently refuses this perspective throughout the show. Christian drinks at an airport bar, a setting that begins a downward spiral to his eventual demise, mostly due to his inability to let things go and his discovery that he just doesn't have whatever it takes. Jack's stop at an airport bar marks his eventual spiral downward and then his triumphant return as a renewed man of faith, still human and fallible, but definitely having what it takes and eventually learning to let go. So this idea of Ana Lucia's, like the way in which Ana Lucia touches these two men on different trajectories of their downward, upward spiral or what have you, is interesting. But then to me, it positions the character. I mean, I just think that that's a wasted opportunity of Michelle Rodriguez. If that's like the lens through which we're viewing that character as like how she helps us understand Jack and Christian Shepherd.
Mm-hmm. And like, I'm I not think as, if they, if yeah. it's possible if the, if Ana Lucia would have stuck around longer, they could have landed that in a way that was interesting for her character.
Yeah.
But the fact that she's cut so short, I think only it's just pile on of like, this sucks.
There was like so much potential in the first Ana Lucia flashback episode ending with, you know, her and Jack coming back across each other in the jungle and like, you know, maybe this feeling that both of these characters who were forced into like this lonely leadership position would be able to like team up based on this one friendly conversation they had at like a bar afterwards. And then that never really pays off. That kind of goes the same way.
They were going to build an army, Dave.
Yeah, because the same way as building an army.
There was already an army being built to stop their army. That's how serious their army was at one point. Yeah.
Well, so what's interesting about this, like, Jack and Christian parallel, and I just finished my rewatch of the final season again with our producer, Diana. It went really well. I don't think I said this on the podcast already, but I... watching the finale, I started crying at the like Juliet Sawyer vending machine scene and did not stop till the end. So I'm still like, I guess all in on the finale of Lost, but, you know, the final season of Lost and the journey of Jack Shepherd is so interesting to me. It works really well for me. And, this idea of there before the grace of the island goes Jack, like that Jack could easily be, have just followed directly in Christian's footsteps, that he was on his way. And the alcohol abuse, that we see from Jack in other episodes, we haven't seen it much or at all on the show, right? Like
I don't think we've seen it at all yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was interesting. You know, Josh Wiggler did a great job in last week's episode, but you know, we had some conversations that didn't make it into the episode sort of after we stopped recording when he was trying to figure out like what, I mean, I think he did say in the interview that he wanted to like maybe come back for Stranger in a Strange Land, but, cause he said he's like oddly a defender of that episode. I was like, talk to me about your Stranger in a Strange Land defense. And he's like, we need to see Jack on that bender in Stranger in a Strange Land. So he's like, it could have been done better, but we see Jack on a bender in Stranger in a Strange Land, so that we then believe that we were fooled into
that
thinking
that season three is still a flashback.
Yeah, that the ending is a flashback. And I'm like, that's not terrible, honestly. Cause we have that episode and then there's, you know, the one where he's like following his dad, convinced his dad is having an affair with Sarah or whatever.
Interestingly, if people who are subscribed to our Patreon could, you know, get the feed of the official Lost podcast, but also to return a little bit to that, the at the top of the podcast is a very brief interview with Matthew Fox, who does say that So at this point, they haven't started writing season 3 yet, we know from the other official podcast check-in. But Matthew Fox says on this episode, I have a feeling that sort of the next chapter in Jack's backstory after what's happened with him and Sarah will involve him probably spinning out pretty badly and going to a fairly dark part of himself at some point. And I think the tattoos that Jack Shepherd has will have something to do with that period of his life.
Yeah.
So there's Matthew Fox being like, Matthew Fox has an idea for an episode.
Oh, we could blame it all on Matthew Fox, maybe, then.
Yeah, we could. Well, I mean, it is his tattoo, so...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Michael Keaton doesn't have a tattoo with a 3 on it for some reason.
But, I mean, I I'm not ready to defend Stranger to Strangeland. Even Damon Lindelof, like, is not ready to do that. But the further mirroring of Christian and Jack is eternally an interesting theme for me. My appetite for that, I guess, is deeper than some people's. But Ana Lucia having like mirror airport bar conversations with the two of them, yeah, I don't hate that. There's just some other like everything's connected sort of stuff, and these two episodes back to back where we get like Christian was in Australia to see Claire, and then Echo met Claire's psychic, and it's like, it's just a lot that's happening that they really loved, and I feel like needs to be used sort of sparingly. Someone in our Patreon Slack posted this infographic that someone made of the way in which everyone was connected, and it is bananas. There is a lot of stuff that like I never
witnessed his birth. Yeah. The dotted line is for witnessed his birth.
It's a lot of stuff. So yeah.
Well, question mark is, as we discussed last week, part of the roll and tumble towards the end of the season. Neil, where are we going next week?
Ooh, next week we're going to experience something called 3 minutes. And that is a Michael episode. It's all about Michael. It's a very good episode. I mean, we're in the storms at this point, so.
Yeah. It's one of these where it's the flashback is on the island.
The flashback is the episode.
Dun, dun, dun. Until then, where can people find more of our work around the internet? We'll start this week with Neil Miller.
Well, you can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, on Twitter at rejects, at One Perfect Shot. I'm watching a bunch of action movies. And don't forget, if you are a member of our Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers, get into that Slack. There's a little channel called Stream Together, Watch Alone. We're doing Breaking Bad. Join us for your favorite episodes. It'll be great. It's been super fun so far. Forgot how gross that show was.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com, where right now I'm doing... still watching podcasts about Westworld and also the FX on Hulu series Mrs. America. I really hope you tune into that one. I'm really excited about that. And also Little Gold Men, where we are watching sort of Oscar classics. This last week we watched Casablanca and talked about that on the podcast. So and on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where we realize this week will be the 6th week. At least one of us was social distancing, self-isolating, quarantined, what have you. We're all in it together. And even though you're probably not going outside, falling down is dangerous, even when it's not into a mountain river. So please don't do it. We'll see you next week.